listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 204 of the Nerd Assemble podcast. I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie.
I'm Paul, just Paul.
I'm Emily, just Emily.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid, or just Retroid, that bloke there that just goes on about stuff.
Hashtag be yourself.
Yeah, gets angry at YouTube recommendations.
Yeah. So, this week we are going to be talking about a brilliant time traveller who likes to travel in a blue police box because he can't be asked to fix the chameleon circuit called the Doctor.
Is it Dr. Sam Beckett?
No, unfortunately not. No, not Sam Beckett. The other Doctor.
That would be an interesting crossover, though.
It would be. And they've done Doctor Who crossovers with Star Trek.
Yes.
Wasn't that the comics? Yeah.
But they've also done crossovers between Star Trek and the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Right, anyway, swiftly moving on before we...
And that's coming from the comic fan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I read one comic, thank you.
Yep, that's more than enough. That one comic, that's about five comics too many.
That was November the 5th, and it certainly got burned on November the 5th as well. Okay, so we're of course talking about the one, the only Doctor who entered our lives or entered TV history on November the 23rd, 1963, going from memory. So it's been going on for a long, long, long time.
Longer than any of us.
Yes.
Wait, does this mean that Doctor Who started around the Kennedy assassination?
It was actually delayed due to the Kennedy assassination.
Wow.
Now, you see, Kennedy could have shown some consideration there because, you know, sci-fi fans didn't have much to watch.
To be fair, I mean, the Doctor could have showed some consideration there.
So, it was actually, I think it was actually broadcast a couple of days before or on the same day as Coronation Street as well.
Well, wasn't it something like it was broadcast, but it just got snowed under by stuff and then they repeated it?
Yes, pretty much. Definitely. It started off with the Unearthly Child.
Surely, I deserve some points for that, considering I wasn't alive for another decade plus.
Yes. Did you ever actually watch The Unearthly Child?
Yes. It was quite boring.
It was, but it did set the tone. And of course, second episode.
To be fair to it, it was the first of its type. Yes. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. And you learn as you go along. So
where does Doctor Who's broadcast kind of line up time wise with something like was it Quatermass?
Quatermass.
Because obviously, because that was that both radio and TV?
I believe so. Quatermass, I believe, was both radio and TV.
Was it BBC? Yeah. Must have been.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was.
So
and also a film.
Was that around before Doctor Who? At least the start of it? Because I know there's a lot of sequels and stuff.
Putting Cookie's knowledge to the test here.
I'm just thinking about the BBC handling science fiction, because obviously despite the fact that we'd had obviously a great deal of British science fiction novels and stories published prior to Doctor Who coming out, the BBC actually has a really terrible record with science fiction.
According to Google, because I have to admit, Quatermass I have not actually seen.
Oh.
Sorry.
You haven't seen Quatermass in the Pit?
No. Sorry.
I demand that we stop recording the podcast right now. Cookie goes and watches Quatermass in the Pit, and then
1953,
comes back.
18th of July to 22nd of August.
Ah, So yeah, it's so, before.
Actually before. Yeah.
So that would be...
at that point in the 50s and 60s, the BBC had a better record during sci-fi.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, during the 80s, they had Red Dwarf, 80s into 90s, and then stuff happened, and then eventually got moved to Dave.
But do you know what, though? Red Dwarf is the reason, considering how silly it is the reason it happened, actually, because of the popularity of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on both radio and television.
That's true. Yeah,
possibly, yes.
Because that's BBC as well.
Because that kind of proved that sci-fi could work and sci-fi comedy. But because, bearing in mind how anemic to the idea of sci-fi that the BBC were at that time, which is a bit odd considering that they were huge money spinners. I remember, sorry for the tangent, but quick. Things like Day of the Triffids, the 80s BBC version, performed very well for them on TV ratings, and also sold really well abroad, especially to America and Australia. So it made them money, but they were still a bit sci-fi.
Again, I'm going to reiterate my view it's the middle class lot working within the BBC. They've got this weird stick up their ass when it comes to sci-fi.
I mean, the best that they could do during like the later 90s and into 2000s was probably buy it from America.
And even then, as we've gone on record with when talking about Star Trek and Next Generation, they were very eager to knock it off TV at any opportunity. So
anyway, Doctor Who, sorry.
Yes
Sorry, Cookie.
Yeah, that's fine. Not a problem at all. So good old Doctor. We're talking about our memories of the Doctor, which hopefully some of you've got. And I'm hoping to say, let's kick it off with who is your favourite Doctor or Doctors?
Okay, mine... I confess, I haven't really seen most of... the original because obviously I'm a youngster in comparison. And
DVDs
are quite cheap now. You can pick them up on eBay, quite cheap.
There's YouTube, there's on demand, there's UK Gold, or Gold as it is now.
To be fair though, I mean, looking at it from a millennial perspective.
Have I just shown my age by saying that Doctor Who was on the Repeats channel? When it's no longer.
Pretty much. It finished about 3 years ago because it actually started being shown on the Horror Channel instead.
Which is a bit...
For millennials like myself,
why are you killing Doctor Who repeats?
You kind of have a similar situation to what happened with comics with, a massive back catalogue of, lore and, stuff that you wouldn't even be able to get hold of. So there was kind of almost no point in kind of going back to the beginning and, reading now, up to present day.
You see, that is fair.
No,
that is a fair assessment. Because, as an example, to spiral it back towards a particular series that Emily's fond of.
Supernatural, Brian.
When I first started watching Supernatural, there were already about 8 or 9 seasons of it, and it was a bit, why the hell should I bother watching it now? And the only reason we started watching it was my mother, who happens to like, old genre TV, that kind of thing, happened to have at least, the first 5 or 6 seasons on DVD. So it was, can start from the beginning. But when something's on season 8 or season 9, why the hell would you jump in?
Well, it's not just that, but nowadays you actually get entire seasons in a box set. It's not like you have to go to car boot sales and pick up the odd, couple of episodes per season.
Oh, God, Farscape. Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was a lot. It's a lot easier now.
Yeah. Absolutely, it's a lot easier to go back and binge watch something that's even 20 years old now. But Doctor Who, on the other hand, is so old, it's older than Retroid.
Oh,
right. I'm like, adding you to the list.
And like Retroid, it is.
I'm going to take out my vellum, and you as well. You're going on the vellum.
I want to point out, Paul still has a name to his favourite Doctor.
No, I haven't.
Hang on. Is that point at the beginning?
Everyone's too busy insulting me.
Hang on. I said you said it just like Doctor, you'd aged well like a fine wine. How's that insult?
I thought you said hadn't aged well.
No, it hasn't aged well. When am I going to say Doctor, you hasn't aged well, you cheeky sod. Get out.
In that case, you're lovely, and the Amstrad CPC wasn't shit.
That's all I was after. Right, back to your favourite Doctor then, even though you can't really... Well, you can give us your favourite Doctor from the new season, from the new series then.
Matt Smith.
Interesting choice.
I mean, I know a lot of people kind of dislike Moffat's run entirely, but I generally tend to find that they had a bit more of a point to them.
And they had a bit more of an arc to them as well.
Yeah.
And they actually worked as sci-fi.
Yes.
Whereas Russell T. Davis, as I've said before, I'm not a fan of his sci-fi writing. It was always, let's do something and then we can flick a reset switch and it doesn't have to make sense because it's sci-fi.
Mm.
Whereas at least with Moffat, he would have more of an idea. They weren't necessarily great ideas all the time.
Yeah.
I want to put out my opinion of Moffat's plotting.
Yeah, they worked. They worked better. So, yeah, I will always prefer Moffat to run, no matter, with the issues I have with him.
Mm.
Yeah,
as a writer, I have fewer issues with Moffat than I do with Russell T. Davis. So, and I liked Matt Smith as a Doctor. So,
yes, he was incredibly. Yeah. He was both old and young at the same time.
His first few episodes, I was a very bit, what's going on here? But I have to admit, he really grew on me. During the end of the first season, he was in the second season.
Mm. Yeah, he definitely did win me over. Matt Smith, yeah. So.
I mean, that second episode where the Daleks look like Smarty's gone wrong. What the fudge was that all about? With Churchill. That was just bizarre.
Yeah, that was one of the weak links there.
We'll let that one slide. Bless him. Evil.
And to be fair to Moffat, that was... damn it. His co-writer on Sherlock.
Oh,
I had trouble remembering his name the other day.
Yes,
and then I remember
that
what it was.
Yeah. So.
Mm. Fair enough.
I suppose maybe I could go with my favourite Doctor because again it's going to be New Who. I've seen one lot of old Who, like two episode specials, the Genesis of the Daleks.
Mm. I think I watched that around my parents.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's it. But yeah, New Who, favourite Doctor. I don't have a favourite Doctor.
What a cop out!
Because I, at times, equally like and hate them, depending on what the hell's going on with the script.
Sorry, so who did you just say your favourite one was? Because it literally did just fade in and out when you said it.
Yeah. I don't like any of them outright. Because it really depends on the stories, as to whether or not I'm liking them. I think that, considering the kind of backgrounds that all the actors who've played New Who come from throughout the series, none of them have been, serious genre sort of fantasy sci-fi actors prior to being on the show, ingrained. Yeah.
Christopher Eccleston had a couple of things, okay. But it's not like he really did sci-fi before.
Yeah, and I feel like they all brought something interesting to the role, but I don't have a favourite. And I have the old episode, which will stick out a little bit, but I don't have a favourite Doctor.
That's fair because the writing has been variable.
Yes.
I haven't been able to grow attached to any of them because of it, basically.
Right, yeah. Shall I go next before Cookie?
Go on then. You can have more than one favourite Doctor, by the way.
Well, my favourite overall of all the Doctors is Tom Baker.
Good choice.
Because he was... Not only did he have one of the longest arcs, he was the Doctor for me when I was growing up for most of the time. And then it was Peter Davidson. But yeah, you know, Peter Davidson I liked, but Tom Baker to me is the perfect version of the Doctor because he was just... He had the right weirdness, otherworldliness,
yeah,
to him. So I was, yeah, very happy with Tom Baker because he was just a little bit strange. And that was the era when Douglas Adams was writing,
yes,
for the series. So had some quite good stories, even though that was kind of the time when the BBC were, oh, this is a little bit pricey, and it's only little children who like it, so why don't we just try and run the budget into the ground?
With its shaky walk sets.
Yeah, even more than we already were.
Very fair.
But I, of the new Who, because I think it's fair to treat it as two different eras.
Yeah.
I am somewhat conflicted between... I would like to have said Peter Capaldi.
But?
You'd have liked to have said.
But I thought that most of his stories that he had... You know, most of the writing that he had to deal with was very weak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Up until this most recent final series of his, which pisses me off no end.
Right, okay.
But yeah, he had some very weak stories. And yeah, I know we could play the guitar, but God's sake, could we please lose that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Every time he got the guitar out, I died a little bit inside.
Yeah. Tom Baker had his thing with the Jelly Babies, but that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was just his kind of thing where it was,
you know what else is cool?
A little bit random.
Bow ties.
You know, he yeah. would
Bow
ties meet an alien cool. dictator from, you know, a different world. And a different time, and he would offer them a jelly baby.
Normally halfway through while he's telling them off as well.
Yeah, it would be, oh, you're wanting to commit genocide. Here, have a sweet.
Surely so that's some kind ice. Of form of positive reinforcement. That's a bad idea when somebody's getting all genocidal or xenocidal-like.
Yeah, here, you need some sugar.
You're not you when you're hungry. Maybe you shouldn't get them Snickers bars.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I would like to have said Peter Capaldi. I think if the final season had been indicative of his run, I would have said Peter Capaldi. But otherwise, I would... I'm inclined towards Matt Smith.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Because, especially his, you know, maybe first two seasons, the last the last run he had was a weak one. I think that was a sign of, you know, the writing, you know, the writers... being tired and they needed, you know, more refreshing. And I wish that had happened when Capaldi had come on board. But yeah. I think the reason why I disliked Capaldi's first season or two was the same reason I disliked Matt Smith's final season.
Yeah.
It was weak writing. But yeah, so I'm kind of fudging it, but there you go. At least I have reasons. But overall, Tom Baker.
Very good choice, sir. So,
what about you, Cookie?
I'm going to really jazz things up now. So, I actually have three favourite Doctors.
Okay.
Is it Colin Baker? Sylvester McCoy?
My first one from the original era, which I would have to say is my overall favourite one, is Sylvester McCoy.
Oh.
A lot of people will disagree with that because at the time the writing was very, very, a bit like Peter Capaldi's run. I could see the promise that the writing really didn't get there until about the last season with Ghost Knight.
Yeah.
Curse of Fenric, which was brilliant.
And I will give you Curse of Fenric. That was a good one.
And Survival as well. The final one, which was quite enjoyable. So I really dealt with Sylvester McCoy, but he was a bit like you, Tom Baker. I was at junior school, going into high school at the time, so it was generally my Doctor that I grew up with.
Mm.
And he, for me, was just the way he could out strategize people. He was a bit darker than the other doctors. You could actually see him thinking ahead, especially in the Curse of Fenric.
Yeah.
Then, as I've said on plenty of podcasts before, I also listened to the Big Finish audiobooks, which took over from when Doctor Who actually finished. They've been going for about 20 years themselves. 20 years. Big Finish, big audio play people got the license for Doctor Who to start doing all cast audiobooks. And Sylvester McCoy in those books, with the fresh writing and the writers taking the Doctor where they wanted to, he has just become, you can see where he's heading towards the Time War and that moment. You can see more of his calculating ways, how he thinks of everything as a game of chess, and it's quite interesting to see how he really has developed, to be fair. Then Tom Baker, I started watching them on DVDs when I was buying DVDs as a kid, but growing up, and obviously Tom Baker is just, as you said, a bit weird, but he's also enigmatic, full of energy, full of conscience as well.
Yes.
Full of morality. And, you know, he just lit up the screen as the Doctor with his big scarf and everything. So, for me, brilliant. And then for the new Doctors, David Tennant.
I liked him, but...
I really liked David Tennant as Doctor. And I'm there.
I really quite did. Enjoyed him as the Doctor, but I kind of wish Rose hadn't been around for the start of his run.
See, I quite like the whole Rose and Doctor thing. It was quite nice. Then you got Martha, who annoyed me a little bit. And then we had Donna Noble, which I know Retroid hates, but I really like Donna Noble, especially when she became the Doctor Donna.
To be fair, I hate Catherine Tate. I don't necessarily hate Donna Noble.
I suppose we get on to companions talking a bit, aren't we? But yeah, I'll leave that for later.
Yes, we will indeed. So, but yeah, for me, it's those three Doctors that are sort of the highlights. The only other thing I would say is Colin Baker has always had a bit of a stigma around his time as a Doctor, I think would be fair to say.
Yeah.
The critics said he was a bad choice, blah, blah, blah.
Well, apparently there was a whole feud with, was it Michael Grade who was...
Yeah.
Director General of the BBC at the time.
Absolutely.
He basically did not like Colin Baker and was willing to just put the series on rest until the contract ran out, which it's very weird when you think about it.
Absolutely. Now, again, with fresh eyes and writers and being allowed to do what he wanted to do with the Doctor, his reincarnation through the Big Finish audiobooks has actually taken a new lease of life.
Mm.
I have to say, he's still irritating at times, very cocky. Because they've had the time to develop the character, which they were hoping to do in the actual TV show, because of his, you probably remember with his regeneration, it wasn't the easiest of regeneration, shall we say.
Mm.
He was the famous Doctor who actually slapped Perry around the face. Yes, when he regenerated, or went to hit her.
Yeah.
Which was very unlike the Doctor. And he has to come full circle to actually find himself again.
Although, to be fair, the Doctor then went the other way with the new Who, where he seemed to like to, you know, want to have sexy time with the space monkeys.
Yes.
It's like, oh, humans, oh, you're sexy. And you go, no, that's a bit weird. You're a really advanced alien. I mean, you're a really alien. What the hell are you doing? She's a teenager. This is creepy.
Are you referring to Amy Pond? And
no.
Not so much Rose.
Rose.
Yeah. Where it was, no, that's just really, really creepy.
She must have thought it was really creepy when basically Amy Pond becomes his mother-in-law, then.
Now, you see, at least with Amy Pond, they sort of distanced themselves from the idea that she might have a thing for the Doctor.
They did.
Hmm.
And that's one of the things I blame Russell T. Davis for. With the no.
Yeah.
So basically, he turned the Doctor into a time-travelling U-tree alien. Going around grooming weird space monkeys, and it's just, no, that's just weird and really fucking creepy, and I don't want that. The whole point of the Doctor was that he was an alien who was fond, in that way, of humans, and that was just, that was just weird.
That's
did not like
that. So, on to favourite companions then. Emily?
Okay, so I actually quite liked Martha, except for kind of near the end of her run, / when they kind of brought her in to help deal with things, and she was she was kind of all military and stuff, but I actually liked her from the start of her character, with just kind of the fact that she was like a medical student and stuff. I thought that was quite cool.
I thought she was the best of the Russell T. Davis companions.
She was quite normal in the, but without having to be the girl next door, which unfortunately Rose and Amy and even unfortunately Donna to an extent kind of were.
Yeah.
I mean, Clara, she was too mysterious to be the girl next door, but
Clara was too plot mechanic.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, if there was a companion that annoyed me the most, it's Clara. Her whole arc just kind of pissed me off, and in the end, obviously, the last season she was in, I was just kind of, I was half watching it because I was kind of like, why are we still dealing with the Alpha?
Is that because she was treated more as a plot mechanic and a story device rather than a character?
Yeah,
yeah,
it was really,
I can definitely see that. That did get me
really off putting.
Yeah.
So Martha's sort of probably my top fave. Rose, kind of found her annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I just she had street smarts to an extent, but she couldn't puzzle things out that well, and I kind of found that annoying.
And her family, don't forget her extended family.
Yeah, they were pains in the ass. I really liked, I'm trying to remember her name from the current season that's just gone.
Bill.
I really loved Bill. She was awesome and probably first sort of companion that I seriously liked since Martha. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Bill was, even though she didn't have a degree or anything, she was really good at puzzling through shit. It was really refreshing. And the fact that she was more willing to challenge the Doctor.
I really liked how she would see through things.
Yeah.
And it was, it's like this. And the Doctor would be, is it? it's like this. You can't pull this past me.
Yeah, so I really like that. I started off hating Donna, right, when she was sort of initially on the show. But her arc, the end of her arc, the tragedy there, that actually majorly softened me towards her. And I felt really sorry for her by the end. So yeah, those three, Martha, Bill and Donna are my faves from the new Who.
Mr. Paul.
It's kind of a toss up between Bill and Amy. I did really like Amy because she was very much a not a two-dimensional character. She was obviously, kind of wanted to go with the Doctor, but she also was being pulled in, a kind of more she wants a regular life as well kind of way.
Yeah.
I can imagine that's far more realistic than somebody who's just willing to drop absolutely everything can go with a Doctor anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
And, she actually had the love of her life go with her as well. That's, something that doesn't always happen. A lot of the time, it's just like the companion and the doctor, or a companion, doctor, and friend. But, you know, actually having Rory and Amy kind of, and the dynamics between them as well was, you know, quite interesting on a relationship level. And Bill is just brilliant, quite frankly. You know, the fact that you've got characters which a lot of the time are either like trying to keep up with, you know, the doctor in terms of the scientific, you know, stuff like Martha and whatnot, which is enjoyable to see that try and balance out. But the only problem is that the doctor will always be ahead because the series is about him, in essence.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you have other characters which try but often fail to kind of question, you know, the doctor and his idea
message
of morality. Yeah. So, like, say, for example, Donna did that quite well. But I found that Amy and Bill, they're a good balance. They weren't stupid and they took risks by themselves. They weren't just tied to the doctor. They were companions in the sense that they were actual, you know, people with feelings and, you know, they're going to do this. If you know what I mean.
That was a nice change from the classic companions where a lot of the time their duty was to do something really stupid or wander off.
Mm.
And then shout, Doctor!
So basically be damsels.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, apart from there was a good couple that weren't like that.
And the fact that Amy kind of... I think Amy probably changed the most out of the companions. From the New Who, at least. You know, not only did, you know, her adventures with the Doctor kind of result in, you know, her being, like, lost in time, but she also had a freaking baby.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, she lost Rory multiple times. She died herself and was resurrected.
Yeah.
You know, she had, you know, shit going on. She was cloned, and she ended up basically seeing a potential future version of herself where she was in her 40s.
You
know,
yeah.
Lots of, you know, playful times, quite emotional at times.
I quite liked the idea of, with it being a time travel series, Amy kind of went to school and grew up with her own daughter.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, spoilers, but... If you're listening to this, then you know this anyway. Yeah, I like that.
Bill, I kind of hope that we get to see more of her. Because I know in general, especially with the New Who, when the Doctor loses a companion, it's usually a case of not dead, just kind of lost out of reach. You know, like with Rose Tyler with the alternate dimension and Amy and Rory kind of stuck in, you know...
Donna not being able to be in contact with anything to do with the
and,
Doctor
and
anymore.
And Clara being a fixed point in time and going off by herself and whatnot. And, yeah.
Can we just say the fixed point of time is a shitty get-out clause?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, the way that... Because Russell... not Russell T. Davis. In the first season, didn't... Was it... Moffat that actually wrote the episode where basically Rose Tyler kind of saves her dad from dying and ends up kind of creating this weird time loop where these almost Langolier type creatures kind of come along.
I honestly can't remember because there's been very little incentive for me to rewatch any of those.
I know which episode you're on about, but I don't know who wrote it.
Yeah, I mean, the consequences of time travel shenanigans kind of go all over the place with Doctor Who, so it's kind of hard to keep track with, you know, what's meant to be the result of messing with time.
Yes. It's kind of a, I can do anything the hell, you know, I want, and then next week it's, oh no, I couldn't possibly do that because fixed point in time.
Mm.
And you just go, you just don't want to. Go on, admit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think I've tangented on there, so...
Mr. Etroyd.
Yeah, I was going to say tangenting on is my job. God damn it. Let's see. Of the, I'll start with New Who as in a favorite companion. Hands down, Bill.
Yay!
Yay!
Wait, hands down, Bill.
Yeah, that. Yeah, it's.
Do you want to rephrase that?
It's the back. No, it's the background character. Hands down, Bill. A salty sea dog captain, who's a space pirate in one of the the early episodes. But yeah, definitely Bill is my favourite of all the companions we've had in the New Who. She's just the most rounded, the most she's not someone who'll say, but I don't understand this because plot reasons. You know, she'll see right through the Doctor and she'll see right through, you know, what a situation is. She's very quick on the uptake and she's just a really good character, excellent actress. And if they were to say to, you know, tomorrow that we're going to have an Adventures of Bill and her dead lesbian spaceship, I would watch the hell out of that.
That title just will send nightmares down the people that have a problem with the new female Doctor.
Well, good. Because I liked that they did that with, you know, there was the first episode that they, you know, that they where they introduced Bill, where, yep. You know, with the, you know, the girl who had the, was it the star pattern in her eye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then right at the end of her arc, she came back for her. And I just quite liked the idea that, you know, this was a way, you know, not like the stupid mystical diner at the end of the universe or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
That they had for Clara. But it was just nicely, neatly tied up, and it meant that the character could persist. So I was very pleased with that, and I thought it was relatively brave of them to do the whole Cyberman thing.
Yeah.
With her, even though I saw some comments where it's like, oh, it's the, you know, the kill the gay trope, and it's like, well, yes, it was in a way, but at least the character does continue, so she could, you know, continue either just in fanfic or in official storylines.
Yeah,
and I would like to see that, but unfortunately, with the whole writing team changing, with Moffat leaving as head writer, then I don't know if we'll see that. A bit of a shame, but I liked that she wasn't killed off definitively. Second favorite would probably, you know, again from New Who, would probably be Amy, because of, you know, a lot of the reasons already, you know, given, where she had an arc and she wasn't just, oh, I'm so in love with the Doctor.
Yeah.
I quite liked that one where she was trapped, you know, for years without the Doctor, and she just had to survive.
Yes.
That was quite a good little bit of a sci-fi story. Again, you know, go and watch that. I think, was it a museum she was trapped in, something like that?
It was... that was the one where it was like a quarantine or something, wasn't it?
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But either way, I quite liked that. The storyline was quite good, and the, you know, the whole morality of a younger self meeting an older self.
Yeah.
And you know, so that was well done. I enjoyed that. Yeah, Clara wasn't that good a companion up until Peter Capaldi, and then she served less as a plot device and more of a balance to his character.
Yes.
Which to me is what the, you know, the Doctor Who companions should do most of the time. They should be sort of a grounding, and not in a let's visit the EastEnders light family that Russell T. Davis seemed so, you know, fond of. Mm. But yeah, of the RTD companion, definitely Martha. As, you know, Emily said, she was, you know, she was the, you know, the best of those. Rose, I know. I just could not get on with Rose, and I'm not even going to go into why I hate Catherine Tate so much, but yeah.
Okay.
I could not get on with her. Any time I kind of liked her character and the way it was written, She'd go Catherine Tate on me. And it would be, no, I hate the actress / comedians too much. I just can't get past that.
See, I think with Catherine Tate, it's because, I mean, I've seen her on talk shows and she actually, you know, talks normally and she behaves normally. So I think a lot of the time she has, you know, a bit like, what was it, Thingy the Pub Landlord?
Yeah. Oh, Al Murray.
Al Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's the kind of comedy persona, and then there's the actual, you know, person behind it. I think it's like a similar deal to that. So I kind of hate Catherine Tate in the sense, you know, of her comedy persona, but I don't hate her as, you know, just a general person.
But you know what I mean by what she'd be acting as a character, and then she'd do a bit Catherine Tate.
Yes, yes.
And it would be, no, I hate you again. Oh, you've died and you've been absorbed into a library. Good.
but she was saved. She was saved for later.
Yeah, I know. Nothing good ever lasts. But yeah, her character arc, was sad. So there was, you know, some decent writing there. But it's like, yeah, I acknowledge that was my issue. When it comes to let's say, you know, classic, it's probably Nyssa.
Yes, she was a really good character, to be fair.
Yeah, she was the daughter of the Keeper of Traken.
Yes, and very... She was a big scientist as well, wasn't she?
Yes, she was a scientist. She was an alien princess, so she wasn't from Earth, which is a big, huge bonus. Because, just remember, everyone, we can have companions who aren't bloody humans.
Yep.
That does seem to have been forgotten.
Yeah, yes. That does seem to have been forgotten. We, you know... People watch sci-fi, they don't watch it to be reminded of Earth.
Mind you, there is this kind of trait in like a lot of genre stuff these days where you have to have somebody who's basically the audience, who's a character within the thing, experiencing all the things. Like, you have to, as if like people can't identify with something that's different to a human.
Yeah, I say hand on heart, fuck the audience. If you can't handle the idea of an alien who's a time traveler who, you know, travels around in a flying interdimensional box, which is bigger on the outside than the outside, but you need someone who speaks all Cockney-like in it to understand the rest of what's going on in the series, then there's something bloody wrong with you. You can go and watch EastEnders. I will be happy to see you go and watch that.
Well, to be fair, look how many people have turned around and said, you can't have a female doctor.
Yeah, just, but there is.
Half the so-called fan base, no.
I will say, hand on heart, fuck the people who say that there can't be a female doctor. The Doctor is an alien with two hearts who changes appearance and physical attributes every single time they come close to death. So yes. If for some reason you think that requires a Y chromosome or the alien version of which, then sod off. I don't care. It's just... I don't understand the whole, you can have John Pertwee transform into Tom Baker, or you can have David Tennant transform into Matt Smith, but a woman?
The gap.
That doesn't make sense. It's just, oh, piss off. Just, you know, like the people who complained about there are too many women in, you know, Star Trek Discovery. And I'm a lifelong Star Trek. Clearly you're not. You've not been paying attention. Sort of. I don't care what you think.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like the people that kind of complain that Doctor Who has been like politicized, you know, because of identity politics and all that. And it's like it always has been. If you look at, you know, what it always has been, there's always been like moral lessons in there,
and
like Star Trek
and social commentary.
Yes, yeah, like Star Trek.
There's been social commentary and politics in pretty sci-fi as a genre. Has almost been defined by its metaphors political commentary.
I mean, you would almost think that the Forever Wars, by was it Thingy Haldeman or whatever, is like not some kind of weird look at the Vietnam War. But I mean, what do I know? I mean, it was a sci-fi book written before I was born.
So you clearly don't know what you're talking
about. Yeah, geez, you mean you'd be like thinking that, I know, something like Neuromancer isn't a consideration of the proliferation of technology that was rapidly happening in the 1980s, but I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, going even more slightly off topic, you will get people that will turn around and say, I don't believe in the same thing that you believe in terms of political stance. You shouldn't be saying it. Like, say, for example, if, physicist says something about Brexit, and then you'll get a whole load of people kind of going on at them about, oh, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't have an opinion on Brexit. You should be sciencing.
Yeah, what the hell does the smartest person in the planet, in the country and possibly the EU, et cetera, you know, one of the, you know, the most famously clever people that we have around living at the moment, what the hell would he know about something which isn't his, you know, very, very, very specific area of expertise? So, well, I don't know. Maybe he's just clever.
Jesus.
Meanwhile, Doctor Who.
Yes, sorry.
Meanwhile, Doctor Who. The number of times that Doctor Who has dealt with genocide or war or ethnic cleansing, you know, things like that in its history, good God. I mean, the Daleks, you know, the origin story of the Daleks with the, was it the Kaleds?
Yes.
Where it was, post-apocalyptic or, you know, like post-nuclear. Oh, could there have been an issue with the threat of nuclear war at the time? I'm not sure. And fascism and authoritarianism. I mean, I quite like Nyssa as a character because she was an alien princess and she was a scientist. And Keeper of Tracking is one of the best Tom Baker stories.
Yes. Also, let's...
I will agree with you on that one.
Also,
yeah, and it was one of the reintroductions of the Master.
Yes. Anthony Ainley's first friend.
Yes. Because unfortunately, the original actor had died, hadn't he?
Unfortunately, yes. Roger Delgado?
Yes.
You see, I am just full of useless information. There you go.
I mean, I
tell a lie. My favourite companion of all the Doctor Who companions is Adric.
Oh, bless him.
No, that was a lie.
But I mean, another one.
Say that about Adric. Please.
Even around age 8 or something, when I was watching it, I thought he was a tosser.
But going back to the political kind of point, they've kind of dealt with numerous times the concept of refugees.
Yes.
You know, coming from, you know, planets that have been destroyed, you know, trying to live amongst, you know, Earthlings.
Or other groups.
Or other groups, and, yeah, you know, well, how they, you know.
One of their favourite ideas was the idea of the other.
Mm.
And that's one that they seemed to address quite a lot, especially in Old Who. Less so in New Who.
Yep.
Mind you, New Who is also operating in a academic landscape where the concept of the other has been thoroughly and heavily discussed and picked apart, and you're dealing with writers. You may have, in fact, encountered some types of that. I might be trying to avoid it.
Yes, that's true. When it comes to exploration of topics, a lot of those are very much of their time and they become tropes. Just because of the march of time. Like, oh, let's see, how many sci-fi series are going to have versions of the Vietnam War in the 60s and 70s and some of them in the 80s? I mean, there's going to be quite a lot there, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's like, I have strong feelings about this. I'm going to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it by, you know, calling it something different.
Allegory and metaphor.
That's indeed. Them. By the way, I'm sponsored at the moment by Creme Caramel 14.5%. So if I can't remember allegory and metaphor, that's what I blame.
Awesome. My favourite companion throughout the whole thing has got to be Ace. Sylvester McCoy's second companion. Played by Sophie Aldred. She was a teenager who had managed to somehow find a way onto a space station. She was feisty. She liked to blow things up with her own homemade explosives that she called Nitro 9, which the Doctor wasn't exactly fond of, but she did it anyway. She is the only companion I can remember ever seeing attacking a Dalek with a baseball bat. because that's how feisty she was, bless her.
That's true.
How well did that go for her?
Pretty well, actually, because it was a baseball bat that the Doctor charged with sonic vibrations or something, so it actually smashed through the casing.
Wait, what?
Etc.
Yeah.
So, hang on. So Ace had a sonic baseball bat.
Similar to that, yes, but it was only for one episode, yes.
Also, can I point out that in New Who, they say that the sonic screwdriver and sonic technology doesn't work on wood.
Yeah.
Yes, you can get metal baseball bats.
Baseball bat, thank you.
Yeah, but this was the BBC. It wasn't a metal one.
But it was metal, because it did look metal, because it was a weird one.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
But she was feisty, and she was forever... It was... The Doctor was trying to bestow a bit more sense in her, but she was very much the rebel. Rather than getting into trouble and then having to be rescued, she pretty much actually got herself in trouble and a lot of the times actually rescued herself.
She was one of the better points of the Sylvester McCoy era.
Oh, where definitely.
They were trying, bless them, but the BBC were against them.
Yes, they were. But no, Ace was a brilliant character. And I know I keep going on about it, but in the audiobooks, you actually find out that she is the first human allowed into basically the University of Gallifrey to learn about the time vortex and everything around it, which was pretty interesting.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah. So, yes, she would have to be my favourite companion. Second favourite companion, purely because I think her and Matt Smith bounced off so well bounced off each other. She wasn't really a full-time companion, but I did love the story arc around with the song. And I thought she was brilliantly played by Alex Kingston. Cool. It's just the whole bouncing off and the whole sweetie and no spoilers and actually knowing more about the Doctor than the Doctor really was comfortable with.
I liked her character because she put him off balance.
Yeah.
Especially when she blew the TARDIS for the first time. That was brilliant.
Well, I mean, it's not just that, but I mean, it's also to do with the fact that with River Song, obviously, her first story, her last story is the Doctor's first story. So that it was kind of almost destined to be tragic.
Yes, definitely.
That was a very nice footnote.
Mm.
Where at least with Moffat, he would do interesting things with time travel. Because one of the things that always kind of drove me slightly mad about the idea of an alien that could, you know, go anywhere at any time is most of the things would be sequential.
Yeah. Yes.
They would all travel in the same direction, and so there was absolutely no reason for them to. So, yeah, I liked her storyline for that reason.
So, moving swiftly on, I think it's time for what have we all been up to.
Well, just a quick glossing over before we have to wrap it up for the evening.
Yeah.
We went and saw the Judgment Day 3D screening of Terminator 2.
Oh, cool.
Last week. It was definitely the original theatre cut of the film, wasn't it? It wasn't...
Yeah, all of the extras that you've got from whether it's the director's cut or whether it's the Judgment Day Skynet edition and stuff like that. Those were, you know...
Yeah, so it was a regular film. But considering that, I mean, the film came out in, what, 91 originally?
Yeah.
We were obviously too young at the time to see that in a cinema. So it was nice to finally experience it on a big screen and in 3D that worked.
Unlike Retroid, he may have been.
That was the year that I finished secondary school and went to college. And I went to see Terminator 2 Judgment Day 4 or 5 times in the cinema.
Oh, wow. You
so
liked it then?
I've seen it on the big screen already.
But yeah, they did a really good job with it. I mean, it's a shame it was only out for obviously like that one day, but it was good. It was a really enjoyable experience and reminded me how much I really liked the film. They also reminded me how much I prefer the Skynet edition with all the extra stuff.
Yes.
Like, one thing, just pick up on one extra that you get with the Skynet edition is that that particular sort of warden, orderly from the institute that obviously Sarah Connor's locked up in, who like licks her after she's been dosed, basically.
Your goes to your shopping list.
What the fuck, Alexa?
Oh my god, it's Skynet happening.
The orderly, like in the film, the worst thing the orderly does to her in the original cut is he licks her face while she's meant to be doped up on Thorazine or whatever. Yeah. In the Skynet, and then she obviously whammies on his ass later on when she gets out. In the Skynet edition, it is far more justified why she whammies on his ass, because earlier on in the film, you know, when the main psychologist is doing like a tour of the facility with what appeared to be some students or whatever, they go to a room and she's working out because she's, you know, turned her bed upside down and she's doing freaking pull-ups and stuff. And in the Skynet edition, when the doctor tells the orderly to like get her to sort her shit out, in the Skynet edition, you see him try to sort her shit out, and in the theatre cut, you don't. And the thing is that in the Skynet edition, sorting her shit out involves him beating the shit out of her with his baton.
Yes.
And so the later violence is even more justified, whereas in the original cut, he's just a fucking creepy asshole, and the overkill kind of doesn't make sense. So while it looked and sounded really fucking good, it is a shame to be watching a version that's obviously got less material to it that helps ground it a bit more and kind of flesh things out.
There's a few bits which were added, which were in the novelization, because I was enough of a nerd to also buy the novelization and absorb that, because it's like, oh, it's Terminator. Give me. I like this. Things like... in the extended cut, which I presume is also the the Skynet cut, things like near the end where they freeze the T-1000 and they shatter him, and then he melts and sort of reforms, he's malfunctioning.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's no sign of that in the cinema cut. I remember that.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that as well.
But yeah, that was referenced. So I read the I went to see the cinema several times. I got the novelization, read that, and then when the extended cut came out, I was very happy to see that was in there, where he puts his hand on the striped yellow and black warning tape, and his hand and arm are starting to absorb the colour. And he just sort of looks at it, really confused, and it, you know, fades away. So, you know, you can tell there's something not right with him. But, yeah, in the original cinema version, there's no sign.
I mean, that was a big bit in the middle that was actually missing.
Oh,
which was basically where Sarah Connor decides whether or not to smash the T-1000s.
Processor.
Yep. Processor. And John Connor, you know, kind of covers his hands over the processor, being like, no, don't do it, kind of thing. We need him.
Because up until that point, it doesn't make sense that suddenly the Terminator starts picking up, the T-800, not the T-1000 there.
Hmm.
Arnie.
Yeah.
Arnie's Terminator, where he basically takes off right protect. Because there's the whole conversation that Skynet doesn't want you getting too smart.
Hmm.
Skynet wants the Terminators in their place. So the Terminators don't really have a choice. They're based on this, learning technology, but, they don't have that capability thanks to Skynet. And that's changed, and that's why he starts picking up the things like the hasta la vista and the creepy, creepy smiling.
Mm. In fact, I can't even recall the creepy smiling in that.
No, I think he tried.
He did.
I think we need to move on to somebody else's thing. Sorry. We've talked enough about Terminator 2. Somebody else give a thing, I think, because we don't have that much time.
I have two very quick things.
Okay.
We've been watching Twin Peaks, And that has been very slow, but episode 8 is a...
Cool.
So that's quite good. You know, continuing... We will continue to watch that, but we've been watching Netflix's The Mist.
Oh, it's technically not Netflix's. It's them lying again.
Yeah, because there are a lot of series which are Netflix original.
It was on Spike in the US, and if it comes back, it's still Uman and Aring as to whether or not it will. But there's a good chance it will because its viewing figures were good. But it would be on the, I think it's Paramount's getting a channel, like just a name channel over there, and it would be going on that.
Cool.
But yeah, that's been quite good. It's somewhere in between the film version of The Mist and the new film version of The Mist. I'm a much bigger fan of the new film version of The Mist because it's, you know, bad ending. Where it's nice to have a bad ending in a film.
I really enjoyed the first season of The Mist that's on Netflix.
Yeah. But we've been enjoying that. We're up to about episode 6, 7, round about there at the moment.
Yeah, it's only 10 episodes for the entire season.
Yeah, we haven't finished it yet, but yeah, it's taken over from Twin Peaks as the we will just watch this because we will binge watch this. I'll talk about both Twin Peaks and The Mist when we finish them. But the other thing I've been doing is I won an auction for some Atari 2600 paddles, which, if anyone doesn't know what those are, they are dials which provide you with analog control, usually either vertical or horizontal, not both. If you think playing Pong, it's that kind of thing.
Okay.
You can instantly... if you turn the dial very quick one way, then your bat will move very quickly that way, and then stop. So it's a very early analog control based on potentiometers and the variable resistance of a voltage. But I've been trying to make those with varying success. So won an auction for some Atari ones, which are compatible with Commodore 64. And I've been learning more about them. And as a result of that, I've been playing things like Arkanoid and Breakout, and I've been getting my retro on with that, which I know is unusual for me. and also, I managed to resurrect my Easy Flash 3 cartridge for my Commodore 64.
Ooh,
where
okay.
I'd ran what said was a test, but it turned out to be a write test.
Oops.
To the flash memory on it.
Oops.
And as a result, if I tried turning the Commodore 64 on with the cartridge plugged in, I just got a black screen. But I found out that by holding one of the special buttons on it down for longer than you should really have to do that for, which is why I didn't find it up until now, you can get through to the Commodore 64 BASIC. And I used the flashing tools that I have on my SD card disk drive emulator on that to write the menu program and all of that back to it, which means I now have a working flash cartridge basically on my Commodore 64. So I've been playing with that, and yes. And nice. also just last night, I was testing one of my first ever public domain discs, which I got, which was a Commodore 64 5 1/4-inch floppy disk, and it was a collection of demos from Ash and Dave and Ian and Mick, and that those names will mean virtually nothing to any of you lot I know, but I don't care. This was a demo disk from 1988, and it still worked.
Wow.
Cool.
So I was very happy with that, and I had lots of bouncy scrolling messages sending out greets.
Nice.
Cookie.
Yes. I have been very, very sad, and I've been rewatching some of New Who, ready for tonight's episode, particularly the River Song story arcs. and also listening to some of the audiobooks.
Oh, you say that you've done the River Song ones.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried watching them in her order?
Ooh.
Ooh, now that's a thought.
No, I haven't actually, but that is a very, very good thought. Very, very good indeed.
Maybe we should try that sometime.
Mm.
Definitely. Cool. I like that idea. Thank you. But yeah, I've been catching up on some of the older audio plays, because if you do want to see what they're doing in the audio plays of the classic Doctor Who's, there is now a playlist available on Spotify from Big Finish with the first 50 titles.
Whoa.
That is quite decent.
Yes. If I may, Mr. Retroid?
No, you may not.
There is a really good story with Peter Davison and Sarah Sutton, a.k.a. Doctor and Nyssa, in Spare Parts, that I think you'll probably enjoy. Very dark. There is also, with Sylvester McCoy on his own, a title called The Master, which really is... It's very interesting, very dark, and it actually gives you a bit more insight into why the Master is why he is. And perhaps the Doctor isn't as innocent as he makes out.
Is it because he hates drums?
No, it's not actually.
Oh, well then it's automatically better than New Who.
So no, it's not. And the Doctor's actually got a lot more bigger part that he played in it revealed in this story. And that's all I shall say. And the other one that I listened to, which is actually really good, is The Midnight Chimes, which is actually a Paul McGann story.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's basically what I've been up to.
Okay,
well, because I haven't gone yet, it sounded like you were just about to wrap up the episode.
You have to be quick.
I know, I have to be quick. But
are you still here?
Okay, so one, Thronesing.
Oh yeah, that was the thing.
We have been Thronesing. We have watched first six seasons of GOT.
Yeah.
And we finished that
last week.
Yeah, last week.
Nice day for a red wedding.
But there are certain parts of that series that have really scarred me.
Yeah, it's a
yeah.
Oh, well, inviting you to a wedding. Well, maybe not.
Yeah. I don't think so.
House Lannister sends their regards.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so also we watched through The Defenders. Well, kind of half-watched through. We're arting at the same time.
Yeah.
I was quite disappointed by it. I was not drawn into it. I feel like we've had a lot of build-up and... It just didn't like the hand actually shouldn't have been the entire plot for the whole thing. They should have been killed off quite soon early on.
The Hand and Hydra are two organizations that are like really, really mysterious, and you know, and it's like they're actually kind of boring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. May I suggest a alternate name for the Defenders?
Go on.
Danny Rand ruins everything. I really liked someone's comment that they said they were treating it as a long belated, and I agree it is long belated, series of, what's her face? I'll blame the creme caramel, not my terrible shitty memory. Private investigator Jessica Jones. Yeah, Jessica Jones. Yeah, long belated Jessica Jones, which is for some reason really heavy on supporting characters. And can we just have a second season of Jessica Jones?
Yeah.
Yes, it's filming now, isn't it?
Yeah, to me that she was the best thing about the series, and of course by far the worst thing about the series, apart from Other Hand, which is Jesus Christ, ninjas again.
Yeah.
Was Danny Bloody Rand.
They really didn't think his character through.
No.
For this adaptation.
I mean, in the comics, are there more Defenders?
No.
There are just the four of them.
It is just the four of them. It's just you go further on, and then more yeah, get in, added.
It, on the TV adaptation, there's just the three of them. Because seriously, if Danny Rand was just fall down a hole and no one would ever see him again, would anyone care?
So what yeah. else have I been? Rabbids and Mario Kingdom Battle.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm quite digging, actually. Strategy, really turn-based.
From what I've read.
Yeah.
One of my co-workers has been really enjoying it.
It is quite fun. It is quite fun.
You could say it's good to switch things up.
Oh.
And on that note...
Yeah.
Yes, on that note... So, that is all we've got time for. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Creme Caramel Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Is it me or?
I don't know.
It's good
oh,
night
good
from...
Oh, good God. It's only been a week.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891.
Yeah, and it's good night for me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. As usual, you can find notes for this episode over at nerdassemble.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at nerdspodcast. Plus, we're on Facebook as Nerdassemble Podcast. And the podcast is also available on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yes.
Yes.
I got it right.
I love the certainty. Woo. It's yeah. the professionalism that we all strive for.
Hey, I just realised, we were talking about the Defenders, and we are actually a team composed of three guys and one girl.
Oh, cool, I'm Jessica Jones. Yay!
Thank God none of us is Danny Rand.
Bagsy not... I was going to say Bagsy not Danny Rand.
We'll just replace... We'll just replace okay. Danny Rand for the Punisher.
I'm the Punisher then, because I'm miserable and hate everyone, and that works. That works for me.
I'll be Matt Murdock.
Okay, wait. So Cookie's Luke Cage.
I've just said Matt Murdock. Ah,
fine. I'm Luke Cage. I'm indestructible.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. And on that bombshell, it is time for good night.
Good night.